Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
Listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
It's going down right here.
Welcome back. Hour number two on FST. Excited to have you all listening on this Saturday morning. World Cup action going on right now. I watched these matches yesterday. It was awesome yesterday. Both the teams I wanted to win won. I'm not really going to root for Uruguay. It's kind of, I know they'd be a little bit of a upset in this tournament, but you know they've earned their reputation of being a little sketchy on the pitch. But they had a good run. They got to their final eight, but France beats them yesterday 2-0. Cavani couldn't play, so France has really looked pretty good. I don't know that they've had the toughest road as of yet, but here they are. They're in the semis, and they're going to play Belgium, who took out Brazil yesterday. Brazil just could not finish. I thought Belgium was awesome, and I'm happy that they won. I was rooting for them, and they have an awesome team. They're golden generation. They get to their first Final Four in the World Cup ever. But Brazil missed some chances. They just did. 2-1 final. Lukaku was off. They had to take him off because he was so awesome during the match, but he spent so much energy. If they had pushed it to extra time without Lukaku, then Brazil is going to win that. But, Kev, I don't know if you saw either of the matches yesterday, but really a lot of fun. Brazil just missed some chances to finish, and they paid the price. They're going home.
I think that one of the wildest things that will always exist within soccer to me is the let's get up two goals and then let the other team take all of the shots for the remainder of the game move that a lot of teams like to do. But I mean, look, that's obviously the nature of it, right? You don't want to get caught on a sloppy counter attack and change the game, and you can make it harder for the team to score. Yeah, look, there were two clear-cut chances. Augusto, who scored the only goal for Brazil, had a really nice chance after that as well. He pushed it wide left. And then Neymar played one right back into the middle of the box, and Coutinho coming in tried to kind of wrap it around Courtois. I mean, look, from me sitting here saying that I think he should have just shot it straight and tried to power it past him. Like, who am I? I think Felipe Coutinho knows better.
That was the shot to take.
I thought that if he would have powered it, maybe he had a little bit of a better chance. But obviously, again, I mean, it didn't come off. Hindsight's 20/20, and even in those moves.
And Courtois also, late in that match, made the save of the tournament.
Yeah. Did you think that was going in?
So
I couldn't, from the angle, it didn't look like it was, but it was close.
Too close to let it
go. Oh, no, yeah, not going to let it go by. But I just
could have hit the post.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, sorry, I'm watching the match. But the England-Sweden going on right now. This would be a tough one if England is not able to take it. Kevin sent me a tweet to read during the break. It's a random guy on Twitter. He's from England. He's like, my mate has two tickets for the England versus Sweden game on Saturday. He didn't realize that it's going to be on the same day as his wedding, so he can't go. If you're interested and wanted to go instead of him, it's at St. Andrew's Church in Cambridge, and her name is Sarah. So his mate will be off to the match if somebody will fill in for him at the wedding. But same basic joke that I've heard before, but it's funny every time. So kudos to him. In any event, so that's the deal. We're go ahead.
Well, because now we are set. Obviously, we have, you know, today's game, but we're set for France versus Belgium. And I think, you know, they're the two best teams left in the tournament, regardless who comes out from this other side. And you kind of mentioned the point that
English
France
fans
maybe
would be super annoyed that you said that. Why. But I think you're right.
I have no idea why they would be annoyed. I couldn't give you one good reason for them to be annoyed, let alone two. But I don't know if France, again, as you said, maybe they haven't played the toughest road You know, especially getting Uruguay without Cavani was a really nice break for them. I mean, again, on the Belgium side, underrated part of this whole thing. They're the first ever team to start a World Cup 5-0. They are off to literally the greatest start of any team ever in World Cup history. And again,
and an amazing comeback in there against Japan.
Yeah.
When they were down 2 goals and scored 3 in the second half. It's a good number. Yeah, nobody's ever started 5-0. It's amazing to think that some of the powerhouse Brazilian teams never started 5-0.
So, I mean, if you think about it, that would then, in a way, mean, right, any team that's ever won all of their games in a group has never won a World Cup. So, I mean, you know, Belgium, if they complete this, it would be, you could make the argument, the greatest performance in World Cup history. Now, I'm sure, you know, goal differential, all that considered, having to beat Japan in the last, you know, closing seconds of a game. But just from a historic standpoint here, Belgium is pushing something. And I do like this matchup with France because I think the strengths of both teams, of course, are their attack, similar to Brazil. And that own goal changed a lot of things. And then again, it was another counter from Belgium where, as you mentioned, Lukaku was fantastic. So was Kevin De Bruyne and Eden Hazard. And they were kind of the three big stars alongside with Thibaut Courtois. And now you go up against a French team that offensively they are clicking with 6 total goals in their last, in the 2 matches thus far played in the knockout stage. So that is an exciting match.
Who would you pick to win that next match? Who would you pick to win that next match? In fact, I'm going to pull up the odds right now. Mm-hmm. But who would you predict to win that match either way?
I think that,
regardless of odds,
I think I would favor Belgium just because of the form of Courtois. Not to say that Hugo Lloris has been struggling, but I think that could be the difference. They both have such quality in their attack, and in a way, I am pulled a little bit towards Antoine Griezmann, who feels like if you're going to, you know, have any type of lock of a guy that would score, he might be that guy. And again, they are playing with such quality up front. I think a lot of it is close. And again, Hugo Lloris is no slouch in net, but I think I would lean towards the Belgium side because Courtois, again, he was fantastic against Brazil, and I could see him maybe end up being the difference in what should be a great game. I think, you know, you're going to hear a lot of this is the final, this is the final, this is the final. I would not guarantee that in any way. We can talk about the other side of this bracket, but these are certainly the two best teams left.
France is +136 and Belgium +210. The draw is +210. I think the way the draw works there is at the end of regular and extra time. If they go to shootout, basically, do you expect to go to shootout? That's where you get the 210 odds. So I'm going to go with Belgium on the plus. I mean, they're both plus money, but I like Belgium there, +210. Even though, if you're asking me who's going to win, I think France actually finally ends this run. But I would I would probably, because of the favorable odds there, I'm going to go +210. Over 2.5 goals is +100. Under 2.5 goals, -120. So a 2-1 match, I'll take that. I don't see these teams necessarily parking the bus and playing for a 1-1 draw or a 0-0 draw and going a shootout. I think there's enough goal scorers on both sides that we could see some goals. Look, Belgium won a game in the round of 16, 3-2, and France has put up some goals as well, 2-0 yesterday. So I'd like that to be over on the 2.5. But to your point, odds to win the 2018 World Cup left: France 2-1, Belgium 5-2, England 4-1, Croatia 11-2, Russia 20-1, Sweden 20-1. As we are in the 12th minute of England Sweden scoreless currently, so. Good stuff there. Brazil goes home. They're obviously going to be disappointed. They always have a way of deflecting their poor play with some sort of controversy. It's a lot of Neymar in there now. But at the end of the day, they missed a whole bunch of shots. You detailed one earlier. The Neymar thing has become, unfortunately, an overwhelming story about how he is flopping, and the Mexican team had to talk about it. And you could see yesterday that he's not really getting every call anymore, which I'm happy about. He is a guy that flops like crazy. He's always looking for the call. There was one yesterday where the defender was beat. I think it was, can't remember which guy it was, but the defender was beat, and Neymar, he put a hand on Neymar's shoulder with very little, seemingly very little force, and Neymar flopped and rolled around like crazy. Meanwhile, the ball was 2 yards behind him. He couldn't have touched it anyway, but yeah, I'm out on that being a penalty, and I'm glad they didn't call it.
I do think that it's, though, it's swayed too far. I mean, the other, I think it was against the game against Mexico, and I think it was Leun, the defender from Mexico, went over to pick up the ball, and he stepped directly on Neymar's ankle when Neymar was already on the floor.
They called it.
Right, but there were people losing their minds. Like, look at him, he's rolling around. Like, I think that was the video that led to the rolling meme of Neymar that is now on the internet. My point is not to say that it's not calling it, but it's, I think the narrative that surrounds Neymar is swinging a little too much in the other direction.
Right. I think you make a good point, a greater point, a macro point about this kind of stuff, is that people put themselves into camps and they get absolute about it. Be like, he flops on every call.
Yeah.
They shouldn't give him anything. And then there's people like, oh, he's a great player. He would never, you know, a Brazilian fan is going to say he deserves every call because he's a star player. What I'm saying is that what I would tell you is that I watched it happen. It's absolutely a foul. The Mexican player is even worse for doing it because they talked about it going in, that he is going to try and elicit calls from the refs. But you did step on his leg with your spikes. That's a foul. And you did it on purpose. It is really obvious.
And I
don't care about his histrionics.
Uh-huh.
It was a foul in the first place.
And he had the ankle injury coming in. Like, that is one of the parts of this as well, right? Like, that if there's going to be any area that he's going to, like, have an extreme reaction to, it would be the ankle. So I think that that's kind of been a part of this thing too. Let's not ignore that he is someone that the other teams are aware of, other teams are frustrated with, and they do target. You know what? You can kind of make some level of a comparison, right, to the fact that when LeBron drives to the basket, everybody says, oh, he flops, he flails, he flails, he flops, he flops, he flops. But there's also the other part of it, that when LeBron goes in there, he sometimes won't get calls that a smaller player would get because of his size. It's the same thing that happened with Shaq. Like, so we don't have to, as you just said, this doesn't have to be absolute. That name, all Neymar ever does is fall to the floor, or Neymar deserves every call under the sun. I wanted to ask you, though, in terms of officiating, if you have any reaction at all to VAR, this being the first World Cup that they've used it. Because I think that it has been...
Every time... go ahead. I want to hear your point first.
Well, I was going to say, I think that it has been good. I read an article that the accuracy has come up. I have an idea what you were about to say, just basically where you were starting, which is that all the time now players and coaches are calling for it. But I think that it does show that it is now something that is necessary. There's zero reason for soccer to be stuck in the Stone Age because, this is a game that I think, people wanted its purest form and to stay the same exact way as when Pelé was playing it. But VAR is important to make sure you get the calls right. And I think the fact that things are open for review are important. So, and it does not seem to be something that has had an NFL backlash to it, where the reviews take a zillion hours and they still can't get things right. So I think that it has been a positive, although clearly it has seemed to frustrate you.
Well, only on this regard. The fact that they didn't have it until now, particularly in terms of the goal line technology, is absurd. It's 2018. Everybody's walking around with smartphones and could probably film the goals from the stands better than the refs would have the ability to see it. So I'm all for VAR and instant replay. The problem is the slippery slope that it creates, right? And the NFL has unfortunately fallen ass backwards into this on many, many occasions because instant replay for the NFL became something that it was not intended to be, slowing down things to a microsecond to see if the ball moved or blade of grass moved underneath the 300-pound football player that was trying to catch it. The catch rule, all that kind of stuff. It really became something that it wasn't intended to do, and I don't even blame NFL referees anymore. Yes, I see mistakes, but it's so over-officiated and over-regulated, I cannot even blame NFL referees anymore. For people that bash them, good luck, because the NFL has put them in this position right now with the replay hanging over their head on nearly every play. So that's my concern, is that I agree. It has actually not been time-consuming. They have used it judiciously. I don't think they've used it as liberally as we see in the NFL or in college football at times. I think they've used it well, but there are times where people are like, well, why can't we just use it to, why didn't he just use it there? Or I think they're allowing, the good part of what they're doing is they still are allowing the ref to control the pace and what needs to be reviewed when he feels like it needs to be reviewed. Do you know what I mean? There is a level of subjectivity there, but I almost welcome that, because I've seen it just swallow up refs in the NFL and even in hoops, where they're going to the monitor seven times in the final minute of a game.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's always going to be complications with these reviews, right? Especially if you had to review and two people look at the exact same clip and come away with a different result. You're never going to end up having a 100% consensus on the situation. But I think the overwhelming point that I would still make on this, and you, again, you made it right there, is it would be preposterous for them to not have this technology in 2018.
Two World Cups ago, Frank Lampard scored a goal against Germany, which would have been a big momentum-shifting goal, and it was not allowed. And in within 5 seconds of it happening, it might not have even been Fox at the time, whoever had the World Cup rights showed it. It hit the crossbar, bounced over the goal line, goal, but it was disallowed. They continued on. Germany won the match. England was eliminated. So I think that was probably a big one of the plays that was part of the momentum to get this where it needs to be. So good stuff there. Watching the England-Sweden match now. Russia-Croatia comes up a little bit later. Kevin and I will come back, talk a little bit about baseball.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
Love it. Uh-huh. A little bit of Dre, never hurt anybody on a Saturday morning. We're going to do a little bit of baseball here in a minute. And if you want to go to a 2018 World Series game, tune into the Fantasy Sports Radio Network starting tomorrow through July 17th, as we'll be playing the DKMS Trivia Challenge for your shot to call in with a chance to attend the Fall Classic in person. The number to play is 844-843-6879. That's 844-84-FNTSY. The contest is sponsored by DKMS. We're looking for your help in the fight against blood cancer. For many patients, a bone marrow transplant is the best chance for survival. While 30% of patients can find a matching donor in their families, 70%, nearly 14,000 each year, must rely on a benevolent stranger to step up and donate. So find out how you can help the cause and go to dailyroto.com/DKMS. That's dailyroto.com/DKMS. It's the DKMS Trivia Challenge, July 8th through July 17th. Call in and win. I don't know. I have not yet been supplied with trivia questions, so I'll always say it starts tomorrow. I would caution you in suggesting that you're going to call me at 9 a.m. tomorrow and I'll have trivia ready for you to go. So just listen all during the week. We'll make sure that tickets are available. And I've heard these trivia questions. We've done it for the Super Bowl before. They're gettable. It's not some of the questions are tough, but I think you can do it. If you're a trivia buff, like I consider myself to be, I think it is gettable. Absolutely. So
I have a trivia question for you.
Go for it.
First 125 career games, starters, how many games that a starter has allowed one run or less? Who has had most games of...
Jeez, hang on. You're all over the road. Just you gotta help me out. You're nervous. You're spitting out stats.
It's not, the graphic is gotta formulate the graphic doesn't explain it well. So I'm on the fly here. This graphic
okay.
is terrible.
Okay,
I don't want to.
So start it over again. 125 games. This
so within the first 125. Yes, within the first 125 games of a player's career. Right. So then it's the number of games that a player has. Had given up one run or less, a starting pitcher, who's had the most games of that description within their first 125 games?
First 125 starts for a pitcher,
mm-hmm.
they've given up one or less runs.
Yes.
Who's given up the most? Who's given up the least?
Yes, who's had the most games of that type?
You are always banging the Jacob DeGrom drum. So I'm going to throw him out first.
Correct.
There you go.
57. Two is Clayton Kershaw.
Wow.
And then tied for three.
What's Kershaw's number?
54. Tied for third are at 51, Steven Strasburg and Dwight Gooden.
I was gonna guess Strasburg in there too. If you said no to DeGrom, I was actually going to say Strasburg. Dwight Gooden, that's
good. Then fifth is John Lester with 49.
That's impressive. I wouldn't have thrown him in there, but great pitcher, obviously. So last night was a walk-off fest. It was really odd. I was just watching all the highlights roll in yesterday, and I was out last night, out to dinner with some friends, my wife and some friends, and I'm watching the Mets games in the background, and I'm like, they just hit a walk-off home run? And everybody's like, wow, yeah, they did it. I was like, who did that? They're like, Joey Bats. I was like, nobody calls him that anymore, but okay. Jose Bautista hits a home run, and then I'm seeing him around the bases, and I throw up a five, and I'm like, he hit a grand slam? They're like, yeah. Like, amazing. Like, of all – it's just such a – it really summarizes the Mets season in a way. Like, I know this is a successful outcome, and they've had many unsuccessful outcomes, but for the guy who was basically retired that they picked up off the trash heap, he hits a grand slam, and that's kind of like their highlight game of the year against a under 500 Rays team. It's a little rough, but, you know, the Mets are 14 games under 500. It's gotten a little better in recent weeks as opposed to how bad they were when we were speaking a couple of weeks ago. But nonetheless, they get the walk-off home run. Jose Bautista with the grand slam to walk it off. Who else did something there? Devin Mesoraco, 2-for-3. On the Rays side of things, they didn't do much. They only had 5 hits on the game. Adams with a home run off of DeGrom, and DeGrom's outing was brilliant. 8 innings, 4 hits, 1 earned run, 1 walk, and 8 strikeouts. So he continues to cruise along, 1.79 ERA. Got to be in the lead there for the all-star starter in the National League.
No decision.
Yeah, no decision. That's right. That's right. Jairus Familia got the win because he came in the ninth to keep the game tied, and he gets the win. He's 4-4 on the season.
He's 4-4. DeGrom's 5-4. What is happening?
I know.
Oh, they're the best team in the world.
They are a story a minute, these guys. For people that do what we do, the Mets are a story a minute. The New York press gets a kick out of this, and I know it's been miserable at times, but the negative stuff sells. If it bleeds, it leads, right? So when negative stuff is happening all the time, it's a story a minute. And Sandy Alderson has obviously stepped down to take care of health reasons, and we hope the best for him. But it appears that even if it takes to the end of the year, this will be an organization in some level of transition with Omar Minaya back in trying to rebuild the farm system.
Yeah, for sure. And again, you know, we don't have to go through it because we go through it often here, is that, you know, the idea of DeGrom being traded to the Yankees. I still, again, if one of those teams didn't play in New York, that deal might already be done, but he's got to get traded. He just has to be. I actually had a buddy tell me that they said it's more likely Syndergaard is traded than DeGrom. I don't know how true that is. I did not do investigating. I think that makes no sense at all because they're never going to pay DeGrom. But I mean, the guy has to go elsewhere. I mean, he has to want to go elsewhere. He's finally offered up his frustrations that this, you know, this has been a tough spot for him. So
yeah,
you know, I look at DeGrom's situation and, I mean, he's got to be one of the best pitchers in recent memory that we've seen hit the market at the trade deadline. So it's going to be interesting to see what type of situation we're going to get into there.
Okay, I got a caller right in here. We're going to line it up. It's Tony. Tony, where are you from, bud?
Yo, it doesn't matter about Sandy Alderson, Omar Minaya. It's all about kids at the border. It's all about the kids at the border and their parents. Hey, I got a real question.
Okay.
Scott Fishbowl, are you guys in it?
We are. Scott Fishbowl, I am in it, as is Kevin Walsh. This is Tony Cincotta, by the way, our friend from Jacksonville.
Is there any strategy that you guys are involving that's different than most leagues?
Well, my strategy is to score as many points as possible and win. So typically, with Scott Fishbowl, I remember last year a lot of people were going hard after tight ends because there's a bump with full point PPR and for full point for first downs for tight ends. I did not go that route because the tight end position is typically a mess year over year, and people think they're going to steal the Scott Fishbowl by drafting Travis Kelce and Rob Gronkowski and everybody early, and I can tell you I saw teams do that, and they cratered in about the first 4 weeks of the year. So to me, it's a little bit more of a roto league than trying to build a better head-to-head team, but aren't they all, right? You're trying to score as many points as possible. But you're probably going a little bit riskier in Scott Fishbowl than I would in a standard league. Is that how you feel, Tony?
Yeah, I feel like with the 6 points per touchdown quarterbacks that I'm considering picking Aaron Rodgers very early.
So I also, because of the super flex nature of it, I went quarterbacks early, which obviously we don't do in our standard leagues, but I ended up with like a Breeze Roethlisberger combo, which was good, not stupendous, but it put me in a pretty good position. I had a good year last year in that, and that's kind of the way I go for it. I want to lock up the two quarterbacks. Neither of them will be Jameis Winston, I can tell you that.
How do you guys feel about soft plays like Odell Beckham Jr.? You know, it's interesting when you look at first round, right? This guy's been hurt the last couple seasons. Then you have Davante Adams, who plays in an offense where he's going to be featured to be the number one wide receiver in a quality offense, but he has concussions. How do you feel about those two guys?
Kev, I'll let you go.
I mean, as far as the Davante Adams thing, I've said a couple of times here, I feel like I'm going to end up with more Jimmy Graham than anybody else because I feel like, not that he's going to out-target Adams, but I think when it comes down to the red zone and everything, I think it's going to be Jimmy Graham. So that it lowers me a bit on Davante Adams. I mean, as far as Odell, he's just so talented. As long as he's on the field, he's got to be one of the first wide receivers that you take off the board. He's one of those guys that I don't try to overcomplicate it with. Like, as long as, you know, when it's time to draft, you get the A-OK that this guy's going to be back. And that's what we're seeing. We've seen some videos of him not only, you know, getting out of the car and dancing, but we're seeing some actual routes that he's running. And, I mean, he looks like Odell Beckham. He's talented enough to where unless you hurt you here otherwise, you have to treat him as such that he's one of the best receivers in all of football.
Tony, do you really think Odell's soft?
I just think, no. See, if he doesn't have the same injury every year, it doesn't happen. Does he get a contract before the season starts? If he doesn't have a contract, I think he does whatever he can to stay on the field, right? And get that big contract. He'll get the contract regardless, though, I think, because it only takes one team to pay him. I think the Adams, here's the reason I'm not a big Jimmy Graham fan. That Green Bay, I agree, down the goal line, they'll go to the tight end, but it seems non-existent, the tight end in the Green Bay Packers offense, other than the goal line situation from the 20 in.
Yeah, for the last, what was the stat that we pulled last year? For the last, for the previous 9 years, the Packers didn't have a tight end in the top 10. We'll look it up so we can, we'll do it coming out of the break. But they have not had any tight ends that were productive back to, you're right, Chimura, Bubba Franks, going all the way back to that. We've been dealing with the Richard Rodgers of the world for a while, you know, occasional spike here or there. But as I've said before, the tight end position, people get crazy focusing on trying to steal a guy. The way that the 1 through 15 tight end will look at the end of the year will be largely unproductive outside of those top three guys. There's just a bunch of guys. I'm the type that's probably going to wait and hope to steal Jack Doyle a little bit later, because I think with Luck coming back, there could be a lot of upside like there, not to mention that Jack Doyle's actually been pretty good for the last couple of years, and you haven't had to spend nearly as much draft capital as you would on somebody like if Rob Gronkowski gets hurt or if Travis Kelce goes down. You know, Zach Ertz has become an elite tight end now, but I'm always trying to play those middle-of-the-road tight ends. Hopefully people are trying to get out a year early on Greg Olsen because he's older and was injured last year. I'll still take him because he's the most reliable pass catcher on that team in Carolina.
Can I ask you quickly on the Jimmy Graham front for the both of you, though? Is because the one thing I know we heard last year with Martellus Bennett, because people were excited to draft him, and people said, well, they've never used a tight end, and they said, well, they've never had one this talented. The same exact argument is going to be made about Jimmy Graham. And I do feel confident in saying Jimmy Graham is a much better player than what Martellus Bennett was. And I think that's part of the reason that
I think Jimmy Graham's the same player, though?
As Bennett?
No, I don't think that.
Or as what he was? Either.
As he was. Oh. As he what he was.
He was really good in Seattle last year, no?
He was much like the, like we're talking about, it seemed like down by the goal line he was really good.
Yeah.
But he didn't have a lot of monster games from the Odyssey and the catchers.
Did you hear the trivia question before, Tony, that Kevin had asked me about the starting pitchers?
Don't make me ask this question again.
Did you hear it?
No.
Okay, I'll ask.
No, I didn't hear it.
So, starting pitchers in their first, we're switching sports on you. Starting pitchers in their first 125 games started. Who has had the most starts in which they've allowed one run or less through their first 125 games in their MLB career?
Based on the conversation, I'm going to guess Jacob DeGrom.
Yeah, that's right. So DeGrom is first, Kershaw second, Steve Strasburg is actually third. And yet DeGrom is 5-4 on the year with a 1.79 ERA. He went 8 innings strong last night, only gave up a run.
Yeah.
Yet he doesn't get the win because Familia gets it after the Jose Joey Bats walk-off. So
DeGrom's interesting because it's another indictment on the Mets front office because they drafted him as a shortstop.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. That's right. They lucked into it. They thought they had a gem of a shortstop, and they lucked into a guy that throws 99.
They had the next Jose Reyes.
Oh, just call a spade a spade. You know what I mean? You got to throw it out there.
Yeah,
it's better to be lucky than good in life. I'm telling you that right now.
Yeah, from your lips to God's ears. You don't have to tell me.
Yeah, look at Britney Spears playing another trailer. She wouldn't be the same person she is today.
If Britney Spears what?
Landed in another trailer, she wouldn't be the same lady she is today.
It's a fair point. It's all a matter of circumstances, right? That's what the book Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell is all about. We're all a victim of circumstances, and it's great to be a hard worker and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But sometimes you're just in the right place at the right time, in addition to being smart and a hard worker and all that kind of stuff. So
last night I was at a bar, right? And this guy spent $500 on drinks. And then I'm listening to the conversation with him and his buddies arguing about who was paying for the drinks. And he said he had to pay his rent, which was $400, and it was a trailer. And I immediately called time out and embedded their conversation. Said, listen, dude, you just said you spent $500 on drinks. You live in a trailer, and your rent is $400. Don't you think there's something wrong with your mathematics, with your priorities?
Yeah. Yeah. I think you want to secure the rent first, then go out to party. It's, unless you happen to be a good DFS player or something like that, you can feel it. You can make it up on the last day that the rent is due. But in any event,
that was like a pitbull con. Yeah.
Do you think DeGrom gets traded before the deadline?
No.
No.
I think that the Mets have a history of not pulling things off that I could see it not getting done. Mm-hmm.
I do think they're going to play. They're going to ask for so much, and they still have him for control for a couple of years that they'll just.
He won't realize, too. Like, yeah, when you get those players under control, like the first 6 years, that's worth gold. Like, it's going to take. Mm-hmm. They're going to expect three superstars. And I don't know. And I don't know if a team will give up three superstars. And if they do, do they agree on the superstars? Like, it's a lot harder there. If he was in the fifth year of his contract, I would say, yeah. And when you guys were talking about why Syndergaard over DeGrom, I don't know the contract situation there. As I was driving around, I was thinking about that. Maybe Syndergaard's further along.
No, he's not. He's got control as well. But the problem is their best trade partners reside in the same city, and it's not going to happen. So thank you, Tony, for giving us a call. We'll be back to talk some more baseball right after this.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things, just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
Back on FST, Mike and Kevin, coming up after us from 12 to 3 today is In This League with Bogman and the Welsh, and then from 3 to 6, Joe Galina, George Kurtz, Weekend Fantasy Update. That caller was my good friend and mentor in this fantasy sports world, Tony Cicada. He's just driving around town. Down in Florida, so appreciate him giving us a call. He always adds some levity to the events. England scored a goal while we were talking, so I'm not sure who scored it or how.
Harry Maguire.
But they're up 1-0. It is the who was that?
The center back, Harry Maguire.
So Harry Maguire with the goal, and nearly another one right there. 43rd minute right now. England up 1-0 over Sweden. So all is well in the English football world for now. For now. They nearly blew it against Colombia earlier this week, but they survived in penalty kicks somehow, some way. But going back to baseball, one other game I wanted to focus on, Phillies Pirates. Phillies put up 17 runs, 18 hits. Rhys Hoskins, 3 for 5, 2 RBIs, 3 runs scored. Odubel Herrera hit a home run yesterday, his 15th of the year. Herrera currently at 277. Cooled off there after a very hot start, but a good game yesterday. 2 for 6, 2 runs scored, 4 ribbies. Carlos Santana, 1 for 3, 3 RBIs for him yesterday. Knapp with a home run, 2 for 4, 2 runs, 3 RBIs. Mikel Franco, 2 RBIs, 1 for 3 on the day. A lot going around there. Philadelphia pitchers didn't last much longer, even though they got the 17-5 win, and they just piled it on. They put up a 7 spot in the 7th inning to the Phillies, but Pivetta only goes 2 2/3. Williams takes the loss, 5 earned runs in 2 1/3. The Phillies used 7 pitchers yesterday in a game that they won 17-5. It's always curious, but let's see. Yanks dropped the game to the Blue Jays 6-2. There was another walk-off yesterday. There were a bunch. Washington. After the crazy game earlier this week that they had where they were down 9-0, apparently a team meeting, they're going into the game, they're down 9-0, and then they come from behind. They win 14-12. Crazy game. But last night, Mark Reynolds, who got hit by a pitch two nights ago, Kevin. He got dusted off a couple of nights ago while he was pinch hitting. Got hit by the pitch. Then last night, first pitch, he comes up to pinch hit again. High and tight. Knocks him to the ground. And then later that bat, walk-off home run. Always the best way to get back at him. They win 3-2. Nats move to 44-43 on the season. They beat the Marlins, who are at 36-54 and dropping. But a good moment there for Mark Reynolds. May not have a ton of fantasy relevance, but a cool baseball moment nonetheless.
Can I, if I can pull it back to the Phillies, just because you mentioned them yesterday, putting up the two touchdowns and the field goal, and they look like they're for real going to stay in this playoff race, and we kind of got the update that they look like they're going to look elsewhere out of the Machado situation, because the asking price for the Orioles is just that high, and perhaps that could be a little bit of posturing on the side of the Phillies, saying, look, you're going to have to lower that price, and that's why that report comes out and everything like that. But I have to admit, at the beginning of the year, and maybe this is just not me paying attention, but I never thought that the Phillies were going to be a team that was going to be in the Machado race midseason. And in fact, last week when I was talking to George, he feels that they're going to end up being the team that lands Machado this offseason. So I was just curious your thoughts
this
on that.
This offseason?
Yeah, he thinks that the Phillies are going to land Machado.
This offseason?
Yeah.
Interesting.
So, I mean, and if that's going to be the case, then maybe they are willing to come somewhere on the price. I mean, there's a lot there, the Phillies, you know, being this good. Should they go for it? Will they lower the price? Just kind of, I mean, your reaction to that whole thing, because it's surprising for me.
So, I would say, as far as the asking price is concerned, it should be extremely high. Extremely high. The problem is that they don't have the control that, say, the Mets have for DeGrom. But you don't want to do, and you know, I was listening to the show last week when you guys were talking about John Tavares and the way that the Islanders handled that situation, and he ended up walking away for nothing. They lost a superstar player for zero because they got a little arrogant about what they felt that they could do to keep him here. The guy goes back to his hometown. Like, your organization has not been exactly knocking it out of the park, so why would he stay there because you just promise him he's going to be the man on Long Island? He's going back to Toronto to be the man. It's comparable because the Orioles could be in this position where if they get too arrogant about it, he's obviously not going to stay in Baltimore. The Islanders at least felt that he could stay in New York. The Orioles know he's leaving. Why would he stay? They are terrible right now. He's not going to sign. Even if it was the most money, somebody is going to come close and at least be able to pry him away to a winning situation like Philly. So it is going to have to be a dance for them. You know, unlike a Jacob DeGrom or some other guys out there, it is you have to know going in it's going to be a rental. Now, if you're Philly, could Philly have the right combination of prospects plus the ability to, you know, give him like a 48-hour window to negotiate an extension on his deal and go from there? I think it's the way it would need to be done. That was done, the last time I can remember something like that happening was with Johan Santana, where the Mets were given a sort of a chance to extend his deal. And I would think you would want something like that. You can't give up. The Phillies aren't going to – they're not stupid. I mean, they're looking across the aisle at the American League, and they can understand that there's three powerhouse teams there in Houston, New York, and Boston. So you can't just say, well, Manny puts us over the top. It wouldn't necessarily. So you can't risk it all for this back half of this season, for the last 2 to 3 months of the season, to assume that you're going to win. That you obviously need some protection to make sure that he's there long term. We talk about this in a variety of sports, but in this one in particular, you can't give up the farm for Machado when you know that he's potentially going to go to the highest bidder, and it better be you.
And I will say, though, if they are able at somehow to work that extension out and make that happen, I mean, the Phillies are a team with a bright future, and obviously Machado would fit right in with that type of timeline. And Look, you look at the way this division is shaped up. It is, I would say, pretty different than what people were expecting. And if Bryce Harper does leave the Nationals, then the power at the top of this division is ripe for the tanking. The Marlins are not coming up anytime soon. The Mets look like they could be headed to a similar situation. And again, if the Nationals do lose out on Bryce, then if the Phillies get Machado, they very well could reclaim dominance over this division. So that is part of the reason why. And if part of the pitch to Machado could be getting him in the building for the back half of the year, getting him to play playoff baseball with your team, which is a possibility for the Phillies right now, tied at the top of this division with the Braves. So I do think that the Phillies are really, it is surprising to me, again, and maybe others saw this coming and I just missed it, that the Phillies are in this type of position. But them being for real trade partners with the Orioles makes sense. Again, as you said, that the number is going to have to come down. It's the same thing like we were talking about with Kawhi and the Spurs. When you're trading a player of that caliber, you're going to keep the number high for as long as possible. And that's what they're doing, and that's what they should do. But at some point, you're going to have to be reasonable with what happens there. And I do think that the Phillies make sense. Like, does it make as much sense for the Yankees? Not if you still have Miguel Andujar on your team. Does it make as much sense for the Dodgers? Okay, sure, but you're not going to retain him if he is going to be, you know, dead set on playing shortstop, or even if you're not willing to pay that contract, right, depending on the Corey Seager thing or the money. So the Phillies, it does make sense to, in a lot of ways, for them to be the team that ends up making this move for Machado.
And I've heard some things about the Nationals, too, that the Nationals are not going to break it up, even if they are having a rough go here in the next couple of weeks. They're not going to sell off, because there's been talk of that potentially happening. And, you know, Bryce Harper's hitting 211. He's hitting 168 in his last 30 games.
Yeesh.
He's a very strange guy, strange career when you look at it. I like him. Some people don't like the attitude. I like that he's fired up all the time, and the hair is a bit much, but it's all right. Guy's got his own flair. He's messing with it a little bit too much in the dugout, but it's all right. But when you look at his career, you know, had a few years there of hitting in the 270s, and then boom, 2015, 330, 42 homers. 2016 comes all the way back down to 243, 24 homers. Last year, back up, 29 homers, 319. Now he's hitting 211. I would caution people, though, that are killing him. He's only 25, A. B, Manny Machado had a really brutal first half of the season last year. Fantasy owners like myself remember it, that Machado was just brutal in the first half. I had trade offers constantly, and I just rejected all of them, because I'm saying, you guys are just trying to get Machado for me on the cheap, and it's as bad as it is, I want the good Manny Machado. So I hung on to him, and I reaped the benefits. I won my league because Machado bounced back. He had a really good second half of the season, and obviously it's continued. The momentum has carried it over into this contract year. So the one thing I would say about those two guys, because they've been linked to each other for the last couple of years, Machado's in a better position to get a contract, a big contract, than Bryce Harper. They'll both get huge
really?
Contracts. I'm saying Machado, I think, is more valuable now.
I don't know if it's so. The name value. I mean, we'll have to see. And again, I mean, maybe things.
I don't think that's a consensus. I just think that.
But do you think that it'll happen?
Part of it for me.
Like, you think that Machado will end up signing a bigger contract than what Bryce would? That would shock me. I got to be honest. That would shock me. Although kind of the entire sentiment of this segment is me being surprised by certain things. So I guess maybe it would fall right in line. But
I think he might, because Bryce, and I'm not saying it's anything to do with his attitude or anything, but Bryce does play with a little, you know, he plays hard, and I think he might be a little bit more susceptible to injury in that regard. Now, Machado's had injuries, too. Machado's had knee injuries. They both have not significant injury histories, but injury histories. But Manny's healthy right now. People don't know what the hell is wrong with Bryce Harper at the moment. They didn't know what was wrong with him in 2016, but there was speculation that he was basically hiding an injury for most of the year. He played 147 games. That was going into the preseason last year. The consensus was that this is before 2017 season. The consensus was that Bryce had hit an injury throughout all of 2016, and that's why he hit 243 and the numbers, power numbers weren't there. So we'll see. Is that happening again right now?
So
don't know, but 211 currently at July 7th. This is batting average.
So let me ask you this. There was originally, I believe, Bryce Harper, yep. His comment is, why can't there be a player worth $500 million? Still the biggest overall money signed by Giancarlo was the $325 million deal. Do you think that Bryce gets to $300
million? It's going to be weird if he doesn't. If he doesn't pick up like Machado did in the second half of the season last year, it's going to be weird to see somebody do that. But, yeah, I think he'll be around there. Because you can sign him for 10 years.
You absolutely can sign him for 10 years. I would argue, is there a limit? Can you sign for more than 10 years?
Yeah, it's Giancarlo's deal is like a 13-year
right.
deal.
I mean, I would argue you should sign him for more than 10 years, probably. I mean, maybe you shouldn't, but you could. The fact that he is only 25.
You absolutely should not. You should not. That's what it's going to take.
Right.
History of these big deals is not great.
No, I know.
And Mike Trout's going to ramp up on his salary. This is why there's talk. You know, there's always talk around Mike Trout's availability regarding the Angels. And it is the only way the Angels are going to come back is to trade him, which can you imagine being an Angels fan? I mean, they're currently 45 and 44. I'm not suggesting that they're out of it by any means, but they're certainly not going to win the division because Houston is currently 13 and a half games in front of them. But they are also 11 games back of the wild card right now because Seattle's been on such, and the Yankees are on such a tear. The Yankees are two games back of Boston. So you're looking at two 56 win teams that are in the wild card right now. The Angels are at 45. Things happen, but, you know, say it stayed as is and the Angels are 11 games out of the wild card. I mean, I don't think they're trading Mike Trout now, but I'm sure they're going to take phone calls on him for a while because can they afford to pay him $34 million with a desolate farm system and just hope that it all turns around? You know, they've tried to piece it together a little bit, but yeah, he's getting paid 34 this year, two more years left on the deal. So the 19 and the 20 seasons, $34 million each of those deals. So you'd have, if you traded for Mike Trout, 2.5 years of him at 70 plus 17, $87 million to see what you can do with that. That's the going rate for Mike Trout, and you'd take it over, frankly, signing Bryce Harper to a 10-year, $300 million deal, you know? But you'd have to give up a lot for whatever it costs, whatever that would cost. I don't know who even has enough in their war chest to do that other than a couple of teams at the top of the minor league rankings.
Yankees, listen. You know how the Celtics view Anthony Davis? Like, they're always like, but do you want to make that big trade? Like, you got to save assets. What about when it's time that AD is going to finally be traded? I feel like sometimes that's how the Yankees look at Mike Trout. We don't have to entertain it too much because I don't know if it's going to happen. But would you give up Glaber for Trout? I think you have to. It's Mike Trout.
Yes, you do. You do that deal. He's from Jersey, but he did grow up a Phillies fan, so it's important to note. So we're going to
Phillies super team's coming. Uh oh.
Yeah, there we go.
Going to ruin baseball. My column.
Phillies super team. How the Phillies can become a super team?
Marcus Cousins to the Phillies.
So, Mike and Kevin coming back in hour number three. We're going to talk some football after this.